Hey guys, welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. My name is Blair.
And I'm Burnsy. Blair, mate, we're one episode in to season two, and already I feel like we're hitting goals with season two. That episode with Lael, people are loving it. I loved it. What did you think of the interview with Lael?
That was great, man. Like, I, you know, listened to it not long after you guys actually had the chat, and that was great, dude. Like, I love the breadth of people that we have coming on and sharing with us, dude. That's the best thing about, you know, hosting a podcast is the conversations you get to have. You know, I'm four kids in, oldest is six, youngest is 3 weeks. We get a freshie, but I'm still learning so much. And these conversations, they just spark these things. It's like, man, I never even thought about that. Like, that never even came across my mind. And it just encourages me to, again, just continue to grow as a dad, grow as a husband, and just think things through. It's so good. So yeah, it was great, man. It kicked me right in the face. It was solid. I loved it, dude.
Yeah. And I think what was so great about it was, like, yes, she's an expert, but like, she's so passionate about it as well. And like, as she was saying, like, everything she's done was like her trying to respond to where her kids were at in their stage of life and just trying to equip herself to be like the best support to them. And I think that, you know, that passion really comes through, and like, everything's coming from lived experience, and it's not just textbook sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think that's really what we're on about as well. Like, it's not just, well, this is what the research, this is what the textbook says. Like, Dad's Group is really about how do we connect together as dads and share the experience and help each other grow as fathers.
Exactly.
Which is so cool. But I wanted to maybe focus in on one of the things that Lael talked about in that episode before we get to today's episode. Lael talked about the importance of curiosity and being curious to help us respond a bit more compassionately and empathetically when our kids are having some of those really big feelings and emotions and they're cracking it or breaking down or, you know, slapping themselves to the floor or whatever it might be. But, you know, she talked about how, like, when we're curious, we can really bring ourselves to their level and understand why they're having these big outbursts or emotions or feelings. So I'm wondering, like, is there something that you do, Blair, that helps you to bring that curiosity to your kids' behavior, or like to help you come down from like that adult level of judgment and expectations down to their level of like that raw emotion?
Yeah, man. Honestly, dude, like, the wrestle is real for me in this area. Like, I really struggle. Like, I really do to be able to do that. And again, this is one of the things that stood out to me in this interview. Was like, oh man, like, I, you know, I've heard someone talk before in one of our webinars about how, you know, he had older kids like in their teens, and he was saying about how he fell into this role of just being the authoritarian. I can't pronounce that word, but just about how, like, the relationship was really down to how he disciplined his kids and the authority that he had. And he was reflecting back on his younger years and on how he would do things differently. Right. And that's stood out to me ever since he said that to me. That's like, oh man, that kicks me again, right to the face. And because it was so, I saw those similarities in the way that I parent, because I really struggle sometimes, like, you know, my kids are young, dude, but I still really struggle to not have those high expectations of, like, why are your shoes not on your feet? You know what I mean? I asked you 30 minutes ago. I've asked you five times, why are your shoes not on your feet? And they're simple things, but it's, again, like, listening to Lael in last week's episode, it's just like, oh no, they're not at that level yet. You know, as much as it doesn't make sense to me, they do things that just don't make sense to me. That's a part of my role, is to help them, you know, grow and learn the simple things, right? It's really hard. So my wife and I, we're both aware that I struggle with patience. With the kids. And so it's good. So she helps me as well. It's like, well, situation comes up, I'm trying to understand why my kid's shoes aren't on, or even something like, you know, Ellie hasn't shared her toys with Hunter or whatever else it is, right? And like, trying to understand the situation rather than, oh, it's just a toy, get over it, you know, is to, one, either remove myself first and come back to the situation, Because if I remove myself and think through what am I trying to achieve here, I just think through so much clearer. You know what I mean? Like I do. I don't just react in the moment, which is when I lose my temper or whatever else it is, and deal with it poorly. So remove myself is a big one, or even simply just a deep breath is one too. But yeah, how about yourself, man? What are the things that you do?
Yeah, look, I like that moment of pause. You're talking about like taking a deep breath or even just stepping out for a second and coming back. Like I think for me, like because of my anxiety, like sometimes it can be triggering. So I've just got to take a breath and go, actually, he's not doing this to annoy me or frustrate me or cause me stress. Like it's actually just about, yeah, I think taking a breath and focusing on him instead of what it's creating for me. Yeah, really focusing back in on him is what helps me instead of making it about my thing. And I think the other thing that Lael talked about that was just another, yeah, as you say, like kick in the face is like, even as adults, like how crappy is it when someone's just like, oh, it'll be okay, yeah, or you'll be fine, or, you know, like just pick yourself up and dust yourself off. Yeah. Like, I don't want to hear that. So
I'm hurting, man. Like, recognize my hurt, dude.
That's it. Show me love. So, yeah, how much more for a little child who doesn't have that same capacity to rationalize or reason as what we do, you know, 20, 30 years down the track. Yeah.
Something as well I think has been a big game changer for me is my preparation for the day, like recognizing what my triggers are has been huge. So, for example, and this it's painful every morning. I hate it. But I get up, I've seen recently, and I think we should like look into this a bit more and bring some more like facts to this conversation. But I've seen a lot on like Instagram reels about the importance of cold showers, right?
Yeah.
And what it actually does for your brain. Yeah. And oh man, it's the worst. I don't enjoy it at all, man. But I do, like I've honestly noticed the difference when I have them compared to when I don't have them. Like my ability to deal with the situation calmer, my ability to step away, my ability to take a deep breath, because like it's all good and said, like I want to do these things, like step away and take a deep breath. But in the moment, again, with my frustrations are there, I don't do it. Yeah. But like ever since I've been having a cold shower, which is about a month now, every morning for like, dude, seriously, it starts off like 1 second and I'm out, you know, through to I've got a timer sitting out on my phone outside the shower to time when 3 minutes is done. Because once 3 minutes is done, I'm out. Like I just, it's miserable every morning. But the impact it's had on myself and other dads I've been speaking to about this as well, like my brother and some of the friends that have been doing it as well, has been like, oh no, I need to do this now. It's actually got to a point where it's helped us so much that we have to do this now because we know, you know, if I think it's more about the preparation, you know, of preparing ourselves to face the triggers that we have has been a big one too.
Yeah.
But no, mate, I seriously loved that episode. It just brought so much gold to my thinking and my preparation to every day as a dad, which was great.
And that's the thing too, like with these episodes is we're not just pumping out content, but we're trying to bring value to our dads who are listening, to families that are listening. So yeah, definitely, like if that episode impacted you, let us know, shoot us a message, comment on our socials, leave a review on the podcast, like whatever it is. But yeah, give us that feedback, but also take the time like Blair and I just have to break open what was impactful and how do we actually put this into practice, because we're getting some really awesome people coming through and we're really digging into some practical sort of things. It's really important that we take the time as dads to think about how can this change the way that I parent.
Yeah, and I just want to echo that. Like, you know, these are the things that we've got from these episodes. We do want to hear from you. We want to know, like, all right, well, what has this meant for you? Like, how has this impacted you? What are the things that you put in place? Because, again, we want to hear that. Because we want to use those tips and tricks for ourselves. So,
absolutely.
Please send us a message on Instagram or Facebook to share that about this episode. And we'd love to discuss that in an episode as well. So, get onto that.
For sure. But, you know, from one great episode, one great guest, an awesome interview to another great chat with another incredible person. Blair, you headed off this chat. So could you share a bit about who you talked to and what your conversation was about?
Yeah, well, it actually wasn't me. I was there. I was in the room, but I was like silent. So no, this interview was done by our CEO, Tom Docking, Dad's Group CEO. And so in this episode, he interviewed Mark Matthews. Mark Matthews is a big wave surfer who shares his intense training and mental preparation for surfing and how that's helped him become a calmer parent. It was really, really interesting. I loved like listening to this and just listening to the way he was talking. But in this episode, Mark walks us through the hard work and dedication that goes into being a professional athlete, but both physically and mentally. This was a big eye-opener for me, is how much mental training and mental preparation that they go through to become athletes as well. Now, this interview sheds light on the valuable lessons we can learn from the world of sports and how they can be applied to our everyday lives. So this was solid. I got a lot from it. Again, this is where, you know, we were talking about our preparation for these, you know, our kids' meltdowns or trying to understand them. This was another episode, another interview where it was just echoed that and just brought, again, some just more science down to our brains and how we cope and things like that, but also the tips and tricks that we need to be able to deal with those situations. So I got a lot from it. It was a great, great interview. Mark Matthews has used his experiences of his mental preparation. He's now a keynote speaker around Australia and possibly around the world, and just sharing these to huge crowds. So we were so honored to have him on this episode, and it was gold. It was great. But I loved it. I know you guys will too. So enjoy.
Today, Mark, I'm going to start with a question. What does fatherhood mean to you?
Selfishly, it's like the most amazing experience that I've ever been through. Feelings and emotions are so strong that you can't, I don't think I could have explained them to myself before I had kids, what it was going to feel like. So on a selfish note, it's friggin' amazing. It's also really difficult. Takes a shit ton of energy. A good amount of sort of emotional regulation and control, because you're often very, very tired, but, it's all worth it, man. It's unreal. And then, probably alongside the selfish aspect of how good it is to me, I don't know, I guess the foundation of being a good parent is raising a child that's a happy, healthy, well-functioning member of society and can bring some good into the world and the community and go on to create their own family and do the same thing.
So you as a child and your father, so looking at father from that different generational lens. So we talked about your perspective on fatherhood now as a dad. What about your perspective on fatherhood as a child, like the father that you had in your life?
Yeah, I was like, my dad was my hero for a big portion of my early life. Even though he wasn't around all that much, he's a surgeon, so he's very busy working all the time. But yeah, I just from memory, like always held him up on a pedestal, wanted his respect, wanted to impress him. Like that was one of my big driving things when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I think he just set an amazing example for me. In a lot of ways that I didn't realize when I was younger, but I kind of like look back on it. I'm like, yeah, there were lessons within the way he lived his life, like not so much like outwardly as the way he parented, but
yeah,
there were lots of like positive influences that he put on me that I think were pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear, because it often, as you're kind of referring to there, it's not necessarily what they tell you to do or guide you as a parent, but it's just how they live and do life themselves. Is there an example you can give us from that rich experience of, you know, where you can think, oh yeah, my dad did that way and now I do that, or I aspire to do that? Is there an example you can give from your experience of fatherhood as a child?
I remember having a conversation with him when I was probably like, I don't know, maybe 11 or 12. And he's a general surgeon, so he just like does all types of general surgery on people. But he was offered a shit ton of money to do plastic surgery. And like at the time, like we weren't like poor by any stretch of the imagination. We were doing all right, but he was struggling, high interest rates, crazy amounts of insurance you got to pay. And then the crazy thing is people don't realize that a lot of people who get operated on don't actually pay their bills. So he was like at the point around there was a lot of financial stress. Like we ended up having a cell where we lived and he moved up to work on the Gold Coast, which sounds weird. I work in the Sunshine Coast, which sounds weird because everyone thinks that like if you're a doctor, you're rich, but you'd be surprised. But we were rich enough. Anyway, but I remember asking him like why he didn't take that opportunity to be a plastic surgeon. And it was just like that theme of like, there's more to life than money. Like there's no meaning in that type of work for him. Like that type of plastic surgery anyway. Like, of course there's amazing plastic surgeons. I had one that put my own face back together after an accident once. So there is amazing plastic surgeons out there. Not trying to shit on them, but for him, like the offer was like, he loved what he did and doing like the type of surgeries that were like saving people's lives and stuff. And it was just like, it just stuck with me like that. There's more to life than money, you know, like you don't want to sort of disregard what you find meaningful to just chase money. Not to say that making money is not good, because it's how you provide for your family, but to a certain degree. Yeah. That kind of stuck with me a lot. Like, and then of course, like he, how hard he worked, you know, like that was also, a theme that stuck with me. Like I think he failed like the what's the GAMSA or whatever the medical original like exams are multiple times. And then he had fuck all money growing up as a kid, but he had to drive taxis to get enough money to get him through med school and stuff like that. And it was just like, so in the back of my head, I always learned this, like, okay, you might not be like the best at something straight away. Like he failed like originally multiple times to get through that initial exam, but then become a great surgeon, you know, like, so I don't know, they were just kind of things that I think had a bigger impact on me than I thought at the time, even though he wasn't around as much, you know, like he was busy, you know, like, so it's not like the amount of time I spend with my daughters, like he sees that now and he's like, geez, like you're so lucky to spend that much time and they're lucky that you get to spend that much time with them. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's a great insight. And just to hear how much you learned just through observing, I guess. And I think that's something that is a theme in the research around fatherhood, is that, you know, your children may not do what you tell them to do, but they will do what you do. And in terms of their values and their principles, and you can see that, you know, from your example, just applying those values and principles to your life, you know, around.
Yeah, and also like the amount of love that you get, like I never thought that my dad didn't love me, even though it was a short amount of time that we were together. Do you know what I mean? There was enough to know that. You know, whereas like, I don't know, in this day and age, it just seems more like it's like you don't love your kid unless you're around them all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, and spending every waking minute, whereas I don't know that that's true. Like, I think the quality of the moments that you spend with your kid and the quality of the moments that I spent with my dad were enough, you know, like, so that, yeah, I don't know. I find that part interesting. It just seems a little more modern, the whole thing.
Yeah,
you gotta spend every waking minute with your kid. Yeah,
yeah. There is a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves from the society that's around us with those, I guess, those suggestions of how parenting should be done. Whereas, you know, whilst we don't give any advice at Dad's Group, we do share our experiences, and one of those experiences is that everyone does parenting differently. And the way in which we do it is a way which we, you know, it needs to work for us and our family and our children. And I think that's exactly what you're outlining there. Is there a moment, you know, from those times, like you said, your dad was a busy guy. He was providing, but he was helping save people's lives. And without the work that he would have done, there would have been a lot of people who would have, you know, passed away. So he's an incredible in that respect. With the time that you did spend with your dad, can you tell us about a memory as a young child that you can have, as youngest as you can think of, around that, you know, that positive influence? You said that he shared and demonstrated love and care, or you inferred that. Tell us how. What was an image of where you can remember being with your dad as a young child?
Yeah, there were like kind of two separate kind of things that come to mind. It's like, I remember he saved this one guy's life that he operated on like 10 times in the space of a year. The guy wasn't meant to like survive, basically. And I always heard that story, you know, like in the background, you know, like, and I think was one of the, just like a moment, a story that I heard about what my dad did that really made me look up to him, you know?
Yeah.
But then like we had heaps of moments, like my dad loved surfing, like his passion for surfing was insane. But it's like when you go study, do medicine, it's like, there's not much time to surf. So he kind of like, and then we had to go live in England when he was doing his residency and stuff. So he wasn't surfing. He kind of took up surfing when I was old enough to start surfing. And just as much as he could fit it in, he would take me surfing. And like all those moments are just, yeah, amazing. There's like, we did one trip. It was like, it's probably the only trip that we did where we drove up the coast, the east coast of New South Wales, and stopped at a bunch of spots along the way to go surfing, just me and him. And I remember that trip, like so many moments of that trip clear as day.
Tell us some of the things that you found difficult, but you know, kind of learned to hack it in those first two or three years with Till before you had your now. You've got a 6 month old, and now you feel like, you said, you now feel like a father because you've kind of done it before.
I think it's that? Yeah, most of it is dealing with that sensitivity to their crying or their pain, and you kind of learn what their crying means and stuff. Like I often found, like, even now when Tilly like hurts herself or when like Minty is crying, like, whereas my wife's natural response to that is like empathy, right? Like, it's not like I don't feel empathy to it, but I have this crazy like side response that's just, it's aggression, like anger, like, right. And to that, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, what's making my child cry and, or threatening my child, and I'm going to kill it. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It just seems like it's such a friggin' ancient response. Like, and it's like, I need an outlet for that anger. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I can't control it in the moment. The anger's not directed towards my kids anything like that. Yeah. But it's like this weird, like, it's just this side response that, to me, like, logically, if I think about it, it's like something to do with a protection mechanism that is built into me. Like, if you were, you know, our ancient ancestors, your kid's crying and some fucking animal's trying to eat your kid or something, you know, that emotion's elicited and then you're fighting a tiger. Do you know what I mean? Like, but so to me, it's like, you've got to, like, well, you can't, and you're bottling it up in the moment because, you know, you don't want the anger, you know, like, you want the empathy to show to your kid when they're in that state. But then I've found, like, what helps me is, like, I got to get rid of that energy somewhere else. Like, then you go away, you have your own time, and you do whatever activity allows you to get rid of that emotion that you might have bottled up. And I found that quite valuable. Like, if I didn't do that, I'd get real worn down. Like, and it might be like, So I could step away in the gym, lift weights, hit a boxing bag, hit, you know, like do different things. And what I'd do is like, I'd kind of like remember that response, like the anger, and then let right. it out and just let yeah, it out, right. you know, like, and then I'd feel better. Like it's just, and it only take a couple of minutes. Like you express the energy that's bottled up inside you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really great insight. Thanks for sharing that with us. Cause obviously we all have an experience that, you know, that relates to, the frustrations of having, you know, children who aren't coping or whatever, and knowing how to do that is quite difficult in our own self. And I hope that is a story that will resonate with other new and expecting fathers, that, you know, there's this kind of, you know, you can't say don't have that emotion. The emotion's there, as you're saying, and by
that's just impossible. Yeah. You've had the reaction before you think about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So by not doing anything about it and bottling it up is, you know, going to prolong an explosion, and that explosion could be unhealthy and unhelpful for, you know, your family. So being able to know how to healthily deal with that challenging emotion, that anger, is such an important, critical part of being the father that you want to be, I believe. And being able to just share that story and other people resonating with that, you know, I know, you know, a lot of different people will be listening just going, yeah, I have that, but I haven't got my outlet. And yeah. so working out what is a safe, healthy, you know, possibly even enjoyable outlet for these challenges that we have in parenting. Because if we find that, it sounds like, you know, in your experience, you've been able to at least mitigate some of those challenging feelings that you've had in and amongst having this, you know, really delicate newborn. But being this, you know, dare I say, you know, giant, angry human at times, like we all are compared to our own little infant as fathers, and how to deal with that is just such a struggling, a difficult one to understand, but also I think in just sharing that story is helpful for all of us just to go, okay, we have those feelings. What are we going to do with those feelings, and how are we going to deal with them in a way that's helpful, I guess?
Yeah, for sure. And it's not like mums don't get it too. And people are different. Yeah. Like some men temperamentally like have more feminine temperament in order to deal with kids in different ways than some women do. Do you know what I mean? Like we're all quite similar, but some different. So it's like, you just got to figure it out. The way you respond, yeah. But I learned kind of that type of stuff in surfing, because it's like I paddle out into huge waves. I'm kind of like containing the natural, you know, fear response to panic in certain moments. So it's like it's the same thing. You're like, in some sense, I'm bottling emotion up when I'm out in the big waves too. And I learned that I needed to like release that after the fact. So those moments of terror that I went through, it's like, if you don't release that, that sits in you like that those moments of terror, you know, like, low level, like PTSD type response, like real low level. But if it's chronic, it's debilitating, you know, like, and I find it's very similar for me, like parenting elicits that level of emotion too, you know, whereas nothing else in life seems to elicit that much of an emotional response.
So would you liken that terror of the big wave situation? And can you walk me through that paddle out, that terror you're talking about? Just can you paint that picture for us? So, you know,
let's
go with you on a wave kind of thing.
The most, like the most heightened response is like the moment you wipe out, right? Like a huge wave, like, You've contained all the nerves and the anxiety that's trying to push you to not take off on this wave, and you've tried you've overridden it.
How big is a wave? Like, hang on, just let me get the picture of
You're looking at over 20 foot for me. Like,
give us a real wave example. Which one? Give us a wave that you talked about, like from a location.
Okay, so like surfing. I recently surfed down in Tasmania at Shipstone's Bluff again after I've been injured, so it was like quite a scary process, and it's like going back to 15 foot waves, but in comparison, like the type of 15-foot wave at Shipstone's Bluff is comparable to like a 40-foot wave in a different deep water location, like the amount of terror it elicits, you know.
And Shipstone's that one with the lump in the middle of it, right? You got to do a jump halfway through.
That deep wave that comes out of deep water breaks on shallow reef, like slab wave, we call it, which is exponentially more powerful, scary, dangerous, like all those different things. Also creates the best barrel that you can find. So if you do ride one successfully, that's the feeling that you're addicted to, that you want to keep doing.
Wow. But, okay. So where's the fear? Is it on the paddle out? Is it in the drill?
Yeah, there's fear the whole way through the day. But the main part, the part that, you know, that I'm talking about that you need to release is like the wipeout. So you've gotten yourself to take off on the wave, but then you wipe out and it's like, there's a moment of terror, like as you fall, like initial response of terror. And then you fall into the wave and the wave's going to do what it's going to do with you. Like it's rolling you around underwater. But from that point, your best chance of survival is forcing yourself to relax and not panic. Because if you panic, you run out of oxygen. If you panic too much, your body goes real stiff and you're more likely to get injured. Like there's all different things, but the more relaxed you can be down there, the better you deal with that situation. But to me, I still feel like to a degree you're bottling up and the natural response that's happened, like that moment of terror is the real response, you know, like, so you are kind of bottling that up. And I just found throughout my career, it's like that bottling up emotions like that is down the track leads to trouble, you know, like, and you can think of it in terms of just, it's like if emotion is energy, right? Like, say energy in motion, like that's what emotion is. And it's just like neurological signatures between neurons firing, like what, like you can just see that it is actually energy, right? So if you have an energetic response that's not expressed and it's contained in you, then that signature of what that is still going to sit in you, like, and it needs to be expressed. And you can see that, like, you can, like, scientists can take it down to different layers or levels of analysis in physiology and see like the signatures, whether it's on a chemical level or an energetic level, you know, like, so it's not I'm probably coming across quite like esoteric, I'm like out there in the fucking land of the fairies, but it's not. It's like you're just trying to recalibrate your nervous system after you go through something hard. That's basically what it is. And if you don't do it, like you said, the bottled up emotion will come out in a different situation. And that's where you're like, you react completely out of accordance to what is happening. Like, so you'll completely overreact to something else because all that bottled up emotion is coming out in a different situation where you just can't control it, where the trigger's tiny and you shouldn't respond the way you're responding. That's what, like, so I found that with surfing to do that helped. And I hadn't come across anything until being a dad that elicited that kind of like emotion that really needed to be like, you need to get that shit out of you. Otherwise it's going to come out at an inopportune time. But it's like that. I mean, for single parents, they tell them, it's like, it's so hard with a kid when they're crying all night. You don't know what it is to help them. And they're just crying. It's like, eventually, like, you can get angry at the kid if you don't manage it, you know? And they tell parents, it's like, whatever you do, don't shake your baby. And it's like, when you first hear that, in that, like, you're in that baby bubble, and you're like, who would ever shake a baby, you know? Yeah. Like, and I've never gotten to the point where, of course, I've never been there, but I do understand how people could get there. I've always had help. Like, I've had my wife. I had, like, if you're on your own, man, and that's why they tell single parents, single mothers, whatever, put the baby down, walk away, contain yourself, express whatever emotion, come back, and then pick the baby up. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's like the real severe case, but that's, if they got to tell you it at the hospital, shit it's must important. Happen.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. And in that space of that terror or that anger, and then taking that into that fatherhood space and that, you know, that newborn space, it's so shocking to hear, you know, that those same emotions can be triggered in a world where something so, you know, nascent and beautiful and small and innocent, and it can trigger all these things in us, which is just, I guess it's something you, as a new dad and an expecting father, those who will be listening to this type of conversation, it would be such a foreign concept, you know, in those early days, hopefully. I think the importance of what we're sharing about here, it's highlighted because it's not if it will happen to you, it's kind of when in your journey of fatherhood, because your journey of fatherhood is likely to be a long one. And, you know, it's not like a project that comes to an end or a boot camp that finishes or a job that you can resign from. It's for life. And however you want to manage that is up to you. But in sharing these stories, it really helps us understand what are ways to do it well. What would you say is something that has helped you do fatherhood well, a mindset, a framework or an experience in those early years? What kind of, not advice, but experience you would say, I did that with my child, or, you know, to support my infant, and that was helpful for me. Have you got a story like that we can share to other new dads who might be listening going, oh, okay, I don't know how to connect with my infant, or, you know, I'm 3 months in and I still don't feel like the dad that I would, you know, hope to be or something. What story can you share around that connection, you know, that you and Till kind of connection, that skin to skin, if you like, or.
Yeah, I found it's as much as you can, and the amount of time and energy you had, like, and it just depends on people's relationships and their situation and stuff. But it's like, I found like putting your hand up to take on as much of the responsibility and the certain moments as possible, even though you're like, and it goes the other way around, like for the moms, allowing the dads to do that. Do you know what I mean? And not being like, of course you're going to do it better if you know, as a mum, if you did it for the first 6 weeks, the bond is really strong and dad's not as good at putting the baby to sleep or doesn't change the nappy the right way, you know, like, but it's all those things, like the changing the nappies, getting the baby to sleep, like all these little things. I think that's where that real close bond's created. And it's hard. Like often you feel like especially initially, like the baby doesn't want you, they want the mum, but it takes a couple of weeks of doing those little things. And then, and especially it's like the baby starts to recognize you at a certain age way more. I found like now Minty, my little one, is 6 months, and it's probably only in the last like month or two where she really recognizes me. It's like, and you see that glow on their face when you walk into the room, and it's like, that's what parenting's about. That's the best moment ever. But there was like, because I'm way more busy since Minty's born, because I'm like looking after Tilly a whole lot more and my work's way more busy also, I didn't get anywhere near as much time with her as what I did with Matilda initially. And I was starting to get worried that bond wouldn't be created, but it was like, I had to like, okay, I'm just going to set aside this time to do those things with her, whether it's like, I'm going to change this many nappies, I'm going to like do this much of the feeding, I'm going to do this much of the, you know, like there's heaps of things. It's like, it's in the moments that you kind of like, I know mum does it better and it's just easier if she does it, and then you try and just take the baby, but it's in the moments that are harder I think the bond's created, you know, even to the point of like, every now and then, like if the mum's breastfeeding, like, even if they express some milk and allow you to do it periodically, like, and just feed them with a bottle, like, sure, okay, what breastfeeding, if it's better or not, whatever. But I think that creates a good bond for dads. It's like, if that baby's looking at you in the eyes and you're giving it food, that's pretty nice. Like, they're the good moments. And then it's like, if they're falling asleep in your arms, if they're like, you know, all those little things create the real strong bond. But it's like, I see like amazing, like we have a lady come and help us like a day a week. And like she created a bond with our baby, like in 2 weeks, it took like 2 weeks, and the baby gets real familiar with her too. So it's like,
yeah,
it's never too late. Takes a bit of time, you know, like,
yeah, yeah. And there is that sense that, you know, oh, you know, my baby's 6 months old and I never did that. It's not too late. And it's never too late.
No way.
But, you know, it does, there is a time in those early days and months where your connection is built, as you're saying, so much faster than later on in life. So the amount of time you invest, and that's, you know, some of the research shows the Heckman curve, which outlines, you know, the early days and weeks you're connecting with your bonding with your child will set that, you know, deeper relationship of trust for you in the later years, which is really important in that parenting space. Hey, Mark, one other question. It's challenging parenting and fatherhood and motherhood. What have you done in the space around, I guess, looking at you and it's Brittany as a team, as, you know, working together in those spaces where, I don't know, sometimes it's easier just to go your own way, come back, do your thing, you know, and shuffle like that. But there's times when I know you've, you know, I've made a bit of an effort to try and have a team conversation about how we're going to approach a positive or a challenging situation. Tell us about one thing where, you know, you're seeing yourself as a team, because you obviously are a team, because if you're not a team, everything falls to bits, right? And there's, you know, there's some fundamentals of being a team. But what are some of the experiences you go, oh yeah, if you're a new dad, you know, one of the things would be, you know, with relation to your partner, this has been an experience that I've had.
Yeah. I mean, I think the cliche one is it's like, you're the unit, like you and your wife, you and your partner, the unit, and you're the support. And then there's the children, you know, like, so it's like, mum's not wrong. Like, you never go to the baby, yeah, mum's did wrong, you know, like wrong. And you never take the side of the kid over your wife. That doesn't work. Like, that's what I've found. I'm like, we try and be, and like, sometimes you don't feel like that, but I've found it better to be like, we're a unit. You always back each other up no matter what with the bub. I think like, it's kind of, it's in any relationship aspect is like putting yourself in the other person's shoe as best as you can, like, and usually the best way to do that is do what they've been doing for a couple of days. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So yes. If you're working all day and your mum's at home with the kids all day, like, and then you're coming home and it's like, you're not experiencing each other's reality. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's nice to go, okay, I'm going to do 2 days solo with the bub, with the, you know, like, and get a feel for what it's like for them. It's not going to be exactly the same. It might be a little bit harder because you don't have the experience and the skills that mum does straight away, you know, like, but it's just good to get a good sense. And then you can be like, okay, like I get home from work in the chaos period. Like if I do it, I don't always do full day's work, but if I do and I walk in at like 5 o'clock, like that five between, and it's like I'm exhausted, I'm get tired from work, and I walk in, it's like, here's baby, do this and this, and like your initial reaction is like, fuck, I just want to rest after work. But then if I've got the kids all day, like, and then my wife walks in, that's the first thing I feel like doing. It's like, give me some help, you know, like. But then, and then it's the same in the reverse as well, like, so if you're the stay-at-home parent and your wife's out working all day, any way you can experience each other's reality and realize that it's just good. You get a better sense of what the other person's going through, and then your reactions to each other are just better, I think. Like sometimes with dads, like maybe not all, majority maybe split these days more, but like, you might have the financial pressure as well. Like, and I find like that financial pressure doesn't fucking go away. Do you know what I mean? Like, or vice versa, the mum's out at work and you're the stay at home parent. So you got to understand that your wife's got the financial pressure then as well. So like, because I'm at home, and when I parent, when I'm with my kids and we're doing all this sort of stuff, I still have that lingering thing in the back of my head. It's like, which is, I need to make money to pay off all this frigging debt. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it, that makes that the moments of parenting harder as well, you know, like, so depending on what way it's set up in your relationship, it's good to understand that, you know. But then it's like, in my situation, my wife's got way more of the responsibility of parenting. Like, I try and do as much time as possible with the kids. And even if I can get it to 50-50 time, there's just this layer of responsibility that she has more than me, you know, like if things are going bad with the kids or whatever, like she just is the one that takes on that responsibility. And that's a big responsibility, you know, like, so it kind of balances it out, but you just, you forget it because you get caught up in your own world and your own problems. And then you just think that your problems are worse than their problems are, like, and it's funny because whenever I see the flip situations, so say normal, if it's more normal, you have stay-at-home mum and dad's working, and they both have their gripes about how things go in the relationship and what's harder and what's not. Like, that's not a gender thing. Like, it's like we flip that around and have stay-at-home dad, mum out there that have the exact same complaints. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just a human thing.
Yeah,
it's not like good. When it's flipped, it's both have the exact same thing because you just live in the different reality. But yeah, so there's a long-winded answer, but if the more you can like put yourself in their shoes and experience, then you get, you know, it's just more empathy to what other people are suffering through or dealing with.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why we started that the annual Father's Day walk, which is a walk where you walk a mile in their shoes kind of thing. You know, you're a dad, you're a man with a pram, and you push a pram and you get behind and you experience, and through that experience you share those understandings of the challenges of I guess each other.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's powerful to do that. It's hard to do it in reverse. Like, it's hard to, like for the stay at home parent to step into the job or the fun, you know, like what that stress, depending on the situation, but yeah, they're both stressful, life stressful. So, but
yeah, that's
it's,
right.
The stress just makes the good moments amazing. So,
yep. Hey, final word for, you know, a new dad, an experience, a moment that you want to share. What is there?
I would prepare, like, if you got a baby on the way, get prepared, man, as best as you can. It's like everything else in life. If you had something important coming up, you'd be prepared. You know, I'd get as healthy as I can get, as well slept as I can get, change my diet, like get, because you're about to go through something that's harder than running a frigging marathon every day. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to energy, how much energy you're going to need to prepare on a physical aspect. But there's a million different, like, great podcasts like this about parenting, like books on parenting, books on being a dad, books, you know, like a little bit of research was real valuable. Like, my wife did so much, you know, like, and it made all the difference for us because she was just like methodical in researching everything. Like, she had the house set up, like basically color coded to everything that we needed, every piece of thing, every, like, and it made all the difference. You know what I mean? Because if it wasn't, it's just another crazy stress and pressure. Like, she knew the products, she knew the you know, like all that stuff.
What about friends, mates who also have kids? Did you have any of those when you first became a dad, or have you got any of those, you know, mates around the corner that you catch up with?
Yeah, heaps, just because I'm 40, so I had kids late. Like, I got heaps of friends that have been through all of it, and they're just like epic sources of wisdom. Like, not necessarily they like tell you how it specifically should be done and you're doing the wrong thing, because it's always different, you know, like with different kids and stuff, but they just drop, like, the best one I hear, and I hear it so consistently, is friends of mine that are super successful at something, like work, always get a point to where their kids are like older, like they hit 13, 14 and the kids don't want to hang out with them much anymore. And they just regret that they didn't spend more time with the kids when they were young. Like all of my friends, like that's the most common theme that I've come across. And I just been lucky that that's, I've seen that so much. And now I'm just like, I try and keep a decent balance where I can, where I do as much fun stuff with my daughters as possible.
That's awesome. And it's so, you know, it's a truth. You know, we chase our own ambition and success and what we define as success. And then, you know, sometimes we get a bit older and success looks like something different later on and we haven't chased that success. But being able to make a level-headed decision on what you want to define as success as a father and, you know, in your work life, in your relationships, it's something that, as you say, the best thing you can do is just prepare. And I think preparing some of those big questions around what does success look like for me, you know, in 30 years and then work back from there. And that's, you've had the benefit of being able to, I guess, have a few more years and a few more experiences and then be able to make your decision on those things, which is, you know, it's just awesome.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I always, people always ask me like, what's the best piece of wisdom that I come across? There's a website, it's called selfauthoring.com. That, and it's exactly what you just said. It's like, ask yourself what life, what you want life to look like. That this just this writing course that has all these questions that you answer and it will pull out of you what's important to you. And it's like, when I did that, it was quite profound. And any time that I've like shown that to someone, or I've even just used the questions on there and got someone to answer it for me or think about it, it's like, it's really powerful. It's best, selfauthoring.com, it's called.
Awesome. We've now come to the end of our discussion and chat, but Blair's on the line and may have been, I guess, influenced or impacted by some of the stories that you shared. Blair, do you have any questions that you want to ask Mark?
It's probably a big one, but I just want to go back to, you're talking about catching a big wave and just sort of that fear and terror that you go through. And then the biggest sort of terror that you face is a wipeout, right? Especially that place in Tasmania, and how, like if you're relaxed, you're going to cut, like, it's a lot more likely you come through that, like better, right? You're going to be less injured, all that sort of stuff. Now, I was just sort of thinking about that scenario there, but also putting that into my experience as a dad as well. And like, so for me, you know, it's so true. Like if I can relax in a difficult situation with my kids, I obviously can deal with the situation a lot better. I can process what's going on and use it as a teaching moment, whatever it is, right? So what I wanted to know is that how do you prepare or train yourself to be able to tackle those moments, like literally on a big wave? How do you prepare and teach yourself, train yourself to relax in a wipeout moment?
Yeah, it's classical, like what the clinical psychologists call voluntary exposure therapy, like voluntarily exposing yourself to a situation that's as similar as you can get it. And just little step by little step by little step. And through the exposure, you get the skill set and the knowledge to be able to relax in that moment. You won't completely suppress the emotional reaction that, like, the emotional reaction will happen, but you'll be able to control your action even though it happens, you know, and it might be dialed down a fair bit. So it's just like preparation, as much preparation and knowledge you can learn about parenting, and then like little moment by little moment. So it's like, okay, if you don't know, if it's like, I'm going to take on all three kids and I'm going to look after them, wife's going to go away and I'm just going to do it straight off the bat. It's like better to just be like the first one, get as much exposure as you can handle, learn as much stuff from the people who know what they're doing the best, and just slowly build your experience like over time. It's kind of the best. And then of course it's like being healthy helps, you know, like having the energy to do things is going to make a big difference. Diet, exercise, sleep, huge. the direction piece, like that self-authoring suite, that's like figuring out what's important and valuable in life. That's like the foundation of resilience, and having people around you that can help the support piece. Like all of those things are just, they're all the pieces of the puzzle you need to be able to expose yourself to like hard things and pick up the skills you need along the way, you know, like, but that stuff will help you get there, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Cause I've never heard that. And I wish I heard that before I had my kids, you know what I mean? Like going into, cause you think like, oh yeah, you just sort of sort it out as it comes up. But if you're not aware of it beforehand and the situation arises and you're like, oh crap, what do I do now? It's a lot harder to process. So that's really awesome having those tips of getting ready for it, you know, knowing they're going to come up and knowing you're going to be put in situations that, you know, you might lose your crap over, but like, and getting ready and preparing for those things. So that's awesome, mate. Yeah, I really love that.
Yeah. Like, and even just like beforehand, like with that stuff, like that emotional regulation type stuff, sometimes it's the wrong word because people feel like emotional regulation is that you don't have the emotional response, but you do. It's more like you have the emotional response, but you can regulate your like actual reaction to it. So like internally, you're going to have a reaction, but externally, you don't have to necessarily completely show it in that moment. You know, so it, like the initial stages of that is first, like teach yourself to witness the different emotions that you have in any given day to whatever situation. Like, and just that's the first step is witness. It's like, oh, hold on a minute, I'm angry right now. Or like, it's like, hold on a minute, I'm like feeling kind of sad. Or oh, hold on a minute, I'm hungry. Like that's an emotional response. Like, and you just get good at witnessing it. And then once you witness it, then you can kind of step back from it and see the response. And then that breaks the like real stranglehold of it on you. Like that's probably the starting point. It's like, just get good at like witnessing and seeing your different responses. Like you can write each one down in a day and just like that'll force you to witness it. It's like you can just actually stop and write it down. That'll actually, just doing that will break a lot of the power of it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Awesome, man. Love it.
Mark, it's been awesome to get to know you on a personal level, and you've shared some really kind of intimate stories about who you are and your life, and we're really grateful for that. And yeah, we just want to say thank you for the time you've given to us and for the stories that might have impacted and positively supported other new dads throughout the next generation of fathers that are coming through. There's 300,000 babies born in Australia every year, and each one of those has a father or a father figure. And there's, as you said, there's no support really for fathers when they take their baby out of that hospital. There's a manual for a car and, you know, a whole bunch of different training available from different kind of organizations for different products. But fatherhood is one that leaves us quite, you know, without much. And your message today has been loud and clear, you know, prepare and enjoy and make the most of it. Surround yourself with people, other dads who have had those experiences, and also have a plan or a vision that, you know, goes beyond your current moment, but have a plan for a longer period of time that you can make sure you're not going to have, I guess, those regrets that you referred to before. So it's been wonderful. You've really gotten raw with us and real, and that's what we love doing, sitting under a tree with a bunch of other fathers and sharing those experiences. So yeah, if you've got anything else to add, you're welcome to, but we look forward to maybe chatting with you again in the next year or two and sharing where you're at with fatherhood. But thank you.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me on, and you're doing a great thing.
Thank you.
Awesome. And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.